Hi, this is Jim Lee, and you're listening to Comic News Insider,
a podcast for everything comic book and animation.
This is Tim Sale.
Hey, this is Ben Rapp.
Hey, this is Darwin Cook.
Joining us on today's podcast is Michael Avenomi.
We're your hosts, Joe
and Julio.
This is John Cashday, and you're listening to Comic News Insider.
Download Comic News Insider from your favorite podcast site.
Welcome to episode 14 of Comic News Insider, the podcast for everything comic book and animation. We're your host, Joe.
And Julio. Hey, what's up?
What's happening?
What's going on? On today's podcast, we're going to be discussing from Marvel Ultimates number 7, story by Mark... Excuse me if we get it wrong. Is it Mark Millar or Miller?
I think it's just Miller.
Miller. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Someone
Mark Miller, right? And art by Brian Hitch.
And from Ludovico Technique Comics, Living in Infamy, story by Ben Rabb and Derek Hughes, and art by Greg Kirkpatrick.
I like that name, Ludovico.
Yeah.
You know it's from, right?
No.
It's Ludovico. It's from Clockwork Orange, the technique they use where they have his eye open, make him watch the movie and the opera and everything else to it. Yeah.
I've had the movie in my house for 2 years. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh.
Damn.
It's great. It's a classic.
And we only have two titles today because we have an interview to share with you at the end of the program.
That is correct.
Yep, we're going to get more into that.
We'll get to that in a little bit. And the third voice you hear chatting in the background...
is God.
Oh.
Well, and it's also Jimmy. Our rolling reporter, Jimmy.
What's up?
Who is with us for all of San Diego Comic-Con.
Mecca.
And was able to join us tonight, a rarity, because he's usually working at...
Drinking. Working, yes.
Well,
yes.
We're both.
Yeah.
Well, he works with drinks.
Yes.
All right, so let's
thanks
chat
for having
about,
me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Yeah,
thanks
for joining us here at the studio.
Mm-hmm. This is a nice
live
place, too.
From New York City.
Harlem, New York.
Yeah, I'll take another bourbon and Coke. I didn't know you had, like, waitresses and butlers. Nice.
Went a full round. All right, so let's go into our first comic, Ultimates. Now, I had to bring this up. This is Ultimates Volume 2, number 7.
Yeah.
That just came out. I was really blown away by it. I thought it was such a great story. I said, oh, everyone... I wanted to call people up right away. I'm like, did you read the end of this book?
Yeah.
That's great when a book makes you do that.
Totally. That
it really is, yeah.
A great ending. So I wanted to definitely chat about it.
What is Bendis and Miller's problem with Hawkeye?
What is
wrong?
Why?
Well, they kind of did that with Northstar, too. Like,
yeah.
Within 1 month, they killed him in, like, every Marvel universe. No? So,
that's
like they get together, like, who are we going to do next?
So, now it's Hawkeye's turn. Which I guess we should have said spoilers.
Yeah. Oh,
but,
spoiler
but,
alert.
But you know what? By the time this goes up,
it's not really seen. You could have missed.
True.
Last shot.
We don't know what happened.
We don't know.
You just see
the shell casings.
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. It was a great story. A lot of little all the little subplots thrown in there with the was great scene, you know. The little hidden dangerous liaison, the husband and ex-husband and wife getting back together or for lunch and you know, the Thor. I love what they're doing with Thor. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, that is nice. And we talked about that too. What's the deal?
Yeah.
Is it Thor?
Is he really a god?
Is it
crazy?
Not? It's something I would love to see him in the cell and like the freaking lightning.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it is.
Yeah.
Him.
Yeah. I think it is him. They got to be going that way.
Yeah.
But it's like,
I'd like to see.
They'll probably
like to see that.
They might be playing that split personality like they did in the regular universe. You know.
Now let's get Julio's take on. Who's holding the gun?
Yes.
I just came up with, I don't know how or why, but I just started like, I was thinking, wouldn't it be crazy if it was Steve Rogers?
Dun, dun, dun.
Steve Rogers ends up
that
being
be
like the ultimate like,
I just can't
villain
imagine.
In the end of this. I've told three people this and they all say no. Like,
no,
you can't imagine that happening,
why.
But that would be the biggest story.
I think that's great.
That would be the greatest thing. Like
be,
the ultimate American hero gunning
yeah.
down everybody in
exactly.
the name of
yeah.
like whoever he gets sent to kill.
Yeah,
because,
exactly.
You know, he is a puppet He is a soldier.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. More so than the regular Marvel universe.
My only thing is crossing the line, like actually killing one of his own was my only
hang up. Then that line at the end where he just says, now you're just being stupid, soldier.
Yeah.
You know.
Or it's, you know,
and
in that
kid,
case
though,
it could be...
They kill the kid?
Yeah, the kid, hey. Which you
at first I missed it. For some reason I missed past that he killed the kid.
That's why he's like, I'm gonna kill you all!
Yeah.
You know, he goes crazy.
I missed it, and then the second, for some reason, and then I read it, I was like, oh, right.
Or it could be Fury. You never know.
it could be Fury.
You know what I mean?
But then another thing about the Steve Rogers thing would be like, wouldn't it be great? Because at first we ended up hating Hank Pym because of what happened.
Right.
And you know, where Steve ends up like saving Janet, and they're like having a good time. Now she doesn't so much have a great thing going with him, and she's seeing Hank again.
Right.
Wouldn't it be great if in the end everything's flipped?
Yeah.
You know, they end up being together, which is, you know.
Well, I think it's interesting the way they come to an end. That whole last scene I thought was awesome with him by the kitchen, which was like wrong
in the
place.
Kitchen is like,
I know, wrong place to draw me, dude. That was
tossing
awesome.
Tossing everything.
Yeah.
Hatchet and
Did you hear the side story about the art?
I did hear that. Actually, someone that we had on the previous episode, Cody, another friend of ours, heard another interview with Mark and heard that they modeled the kid early on. They modeled the kid after his kid,
really,
his own kid,
unknowing
about the story. And then when he read the story, and was like. He's like, I can't kill my kid.
Oh, man.
He's like, I didn't tell you to model it after
that. Sorry.
So he used his own kid as a model and then read the later script that he had to kill the kid.
That's why he doesn't really show it. Yeah, you can't really. That's why you probably didn't notice.
You know,
that's
a good point.
Yeah.
There was no direct depiction of
You see Clint's reaction, Hawkeye's reaction.
Yeah.
The splatter.
And you realize. You kind of realize it's
which works.
Yeah.
You know,
that's enough. You don't need the planetary kick the spine out. Which is great and cool.
Which
I loved it. But you didn't need it here. I know that.
And what we also said about this book is, what I like a lot about it also is that it definitely runs like a movie.
Oh, yeah.
I can watch it.
I think the entire series has been like that.
From the very, very beginning. I always saw this very cinematically. The way it's drawn, I thought they definitely shoot it. They definitely draw it as if it's being shot as storyboard in a sense of these very cinematic
images. Mark and them said when they started, that's kind of how it was. Planning on doing, he wants to make it very
cinematic.
So,
a phenomenal job.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite series to read right now.
I agree.
And it sets a mark for, I guess, superhero action for adults, which doesn't have to have an adult label on it, you know, because there is no nudity, there is no swearing. We don't need that for an adult comic.
Right. Exactly.
We don't need the hot coffee.
It's not All Star Batman, thank you.
Well.
let's not get into that.
We discussed that the other day, that's right.
So, if you haven't picked it up, I've said it multiple times.
Definitely.
Go back, buy the first series,
start
from the beginning, and catch up. Because it's worth going.
Personally,
it's well worth going and reading everything. Pick up the graphic novel for Ultimates 1 and read them all.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my top
lifters. The Marvel must-haves.
Yeah.
Of F1, 2, and 3, or whatever. When
yeah, there's no point in
I don't
that.
Know what...
That was
pure,
Quesada's
like, whole,
I won't do reprints. Then he started doing the must-haves, and then now they're starting to do some trades.
Must-haves.
It's like...
some trades.
You know, yeah.
So, there it is. Thumbs up all around for that
one. Definitely.
Everything up.
Yeah.
Well.
Good thing this is not video podcast. Okay.
Whee!
On to the next one.
What's the next one?
This is an original piece, Living in Infamy. Now, for those of you who remember Ben Rabb, writer on several pieces over the years.
Gen 13.
Yeah. Gen 13, Daredevil, Phantom.
Yeah, the Green Lantern.
Green Lantern.
Excalibur.
Yep, X-Men Alpha Flight. X-Men Unlimited. a couple of the 2099 series. So he's been around for a while, writing a lot of good titles. And this is a piece that he put out in conjunction with a few other guys, and Little Rico Technique is the company that's producing it. Actually, they are doing a few things. Jimmy was just sharing with us.
Yeah, they're sort of a mass media outlet. I was going checking their website out, and they do a lot of the DVD extras. They did it on X-Men. They're actually on set right now in Superman, and they're talking about how their company works, where it's just, they basically are part of the crew, you know, into a movie. They get hired, and they become part of the crew. And
To shoot all the behind-the-scenes
stuff. It's amazing how that's evolved over the years.
Totally.
They used to be just leftover stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's produced for
I have to say, I was literally one person away from the company. This was early on. The company that got the deal to do all the behind-the-scenes for Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
And I knew the guy. Well, I worked with him at a company in LA, and he had left that company, and we were kind of in touch with someone else. And then I had heard that they got the deal to do all the Lord of the Rings behind the scenes stuff.
For the love of Pete Seeger.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been nice.
I would have been like a grip or a PA.
I know.
Oh, that's great.
I did craft services, hey kid.
Exactly. How do you like your coffee? Spent a couple of years in
New Zealand, right?
Nice. Anyway, so now they put out, this is their first, I guess this is their first
foray into comics,
right?
Yeah.
And Living in Infamy, the storyline is kind of a superheroes.
Yeah, supervillains.
Supervillains in
witness protection
program.
Yeah,
it's not the Incredibles reverse,
right?
We
it actually,
make that
yeah,
clear.
Yeah. And Ben was very clear about this. He was like, we were out one night and we met him, really a great guy. And he was just like, he goes, I swear to you, I wrote this before the Incredibles came out. He goes,
right.
Now all this stuff is coming out that people are, oh, you're copying the Incredibles, Fantastic Four, this and that.
That's
He's
right.
like, no. He goes, I had this concept. And
this long ago.
Yeah, and he goes, we're just now publishing it. But it's basically villains in witness protection.
Yeah. And John Cassaday did a really cool cover art.
Very Goodfellas-esque. It's very inspired by Goodfellas, that last scene where Henry is on his lawn in his slippers and in the paper, and it's a great cover. I love it. It's very
nice.
Although I was reading the back, and they had the series of sketches leading up to this one, and the first one was too Ant-Man-ish, but then this one is too Shadowhawk-ish for me.
Shadowhawk.
I
wonder if
John
thought about that. Maybe it's his little dig at it. Maybe he's just take a dig. There's been 20 Shadowhawks over the past.
And he should retire.
I know.
Yeah.
And
we actually reviewed that one back when that came out.
Yeah. I didn't pick it up.
Yeah.
I was like, mm-mm.
But going back to Living in Infamy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But we digress.
Yes.
Yes.
Living in Infamy, I think it's a cool start to a storyline, an interesting storyline.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued, and it left you hanging, but I thought in a good way. It left you kind of with a, what's happening next, what's going to happen next,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And
there were some really cool little things he did where obviously homages to comics he noticed the character named Roger Stevens, Steve Rogers, you know, and then of course at the end when, you know, in the ice, it's like, that was kind of funny, I thought.
Fight. I think one of them called him like Snow.
Yeah, something like
Snowball
that.
Snowball.
Yeah,
something like that. It reminded me of like
Iceman. The whole thing.
Fighting
with
the beast.
Yep. And bite my popsicle, Frosty.
There was one line. It kind of reminded me of Pulp Fiction a little too much. When they were in the van. He says, easy killer, don't go stuffing anyone's penis down their throat just yet. Whereas in Pulp Fiction, it was easy, let's not go sucking each other's just yet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think this is the first time we've actually said vulgarities on the show.
Well, because of me. Yeah, I had to, apparently had to.
Jesus.
Yeah.
For those of you that tuned into our last one, you'll notice that we had to beep out a few Jimmy words.
Buddy
okay. So,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
It's all Jimmy's fault.
I know. Sorry, I'm bringing vulgarity.
No,
to
so it was a... Yeah, I had fun. I thought it was a fun story, and I'd be interested to see where it goes.
I'm really interested in seeing where it goes, because they've set up a lot of, like, little stories in it and see what's going on.
I also like this idea of kind of creating sort of new universes. I don't want to say new storylines with characters that we've never heard of and just off the cuff, which also goes back to a book that was really cool story. I don't know if you read it, but Jimmy actually gave it to me, was Common Grounds.
Yeah.
Which was a neat story of all these superheroes, none of them that we know. It's all superheroes and supervillains that all go to this coffee shop called Common Grounds.
It was originally called something else, some sort of, or they sort of take on like a coffee name, but then they went to Image and they changed the name to Common Grounds, something like that.
And that was a lot of fun too, but there's a storyline too that we may never see again, but it was a neat concept of this world of superheroes.
Yeah, because I'm really, really interested in seeing what they're doing with the sun, you know, what's going on. Like, obviously, his powers are kicking in or something, you know, and somebody's going to come back and get him.
And also,
and
it's more of, there is some sort of mystical sort of thing going on, because there's a boundary or a barrier keeping them safe.
Right. From part of their witness protection
program. Yeah, keep them safe and also keeping them in.
Yeah, keep them in as well, yes, because they're not supposed to cross that. So.
Cross the line.
I'd say like one of them got like fried when they tried to cross the line or something like that. They like turned to ashes or whatever, or that was just a story they were telling.
Oh yeah,
or something.
Yeah,
like,
So yeah, it's fun.
It's a 4-part series.
Actually, now this, for the listeners out there, it's not yet in wide distribution, and I don't know whether or not you can buy it off the website.
I think you can either at Ludovico Technique or at Bin's site.
Okay. So if you go online, if you go to Ludovico Technique. You can .com I think it's the site. Right?
Yeah, it's Ben and Derek name it in the interview. They spell it out for you, so which is later.
And you can check it out there and probably pick it up. But I know they are working on distributing it for those in the New York area. It will be going to Midtown Comics, but I don't know when exactly.
Okay. That's
and
cool.
Then they're working on. But right now they're trying to do a lot of distribution themselves.
Also, who did the cover art?
Oh, yeah, we said John Cassaday.
Well, he did for them, and then there's four. They got really good artists for all of them.
Great artists doing
that. Oh, there are different ones.
Yeah, they got Tim Sale doing one, Howard Chaykin, and Chris, I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, Bacallo, the guy that did Generation Generation X.
Really nice.
Because they're all, I mean, these guys are all, like, Ben's been in the business a while. He knows all these guys. Him and Cassaday did Union Jack and Alpha Flight X-Men together. You know, so he just, like, pulled us some favors. He said, I was like, hey, come and do some.
Nice.
And it was really cool. And he's, you know, he's a good guy. And it was just nice to see his stuff. And Lucas, actually, another good friend of good friend of Cassaday, so I know as well. He did the inks for it, inking for it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's cool.
Good for him.
So if you see it at your local shop, it's worth picking up and...
Pick it up.
Give it a shot.
Give it a shot. Take it away. So we're going to go on to a little bit of comic news.
Not too happy about this one.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
We unfortunately.
This is the obligatory death section of our show.
I know. It's sad.
Like, but this one hit.
But
hard.
I think it's important to announce.
Yeah, Jim Aparo.
Yeah.
Passing away.
Yes.
Not fun. But personally, I can just say, grew up on his Batman.
Yeah,
what
his Batman.
Say?
Definitive to me, you know, one of them. It's like
I think anyone. Early 20s, maybe mid 30s, maybe, I would imagine, grew up with his Batman.
Yeah.
And I mean, what can I say? I loved him.
Yeah. He's great.
Never met him, but I loved him.
Yeah.
Actually, no, wait, I did meet him. I actually have a signature of his on Death in a Family trade paperback.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
He actually signed mine.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
A loss to the industry.
Yeah.
Brave and bold.
Followed by another, Paul Cassidy, who is credited for adding the S to the Superman cape.
A bit of trivia.
Exactly. From Superman, early Superman comics, Paul Cassidy, and passed away on May 15th.
What was
in
that
Milwaukee,
age?
The age? 94.
Wow.
Further proving.
Further proving Julio's
longevity in comics.
Now, see, Aparo, he's kind of the Silver Age, kind of, so I don't know if it applies to him,
right.
But he died at 72, I think, or 78. Well, which is still young.
Yeah, look at the guy we met that helped create a Joker, Jerry Robinson.
Jerry Robinson.
He was at least 112. No, he was at the show, and he was, like, definitely an older gentleman. But he's still kicking, and he's, like, lively.
He looked great. Yeah, he looked great. Talking
with him. Really nice guy, yeah.
So that's our death news.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
Terrible.
Tip my 40.
The question is whether or not, should we keep our death news?
Well, if they keep happening.
They're big names.
I guess we don't want to bring it down.
Yeah.
But moving it right up.
Now something
from
exciting.
From the death of a comic great to the death of a movie franchise.
Yes.
That's been recently resurrected. But there was news that the Batmobile from Batman Returns was recently sold, and it was put up for auction at New York's first annual Rand Workman Fine Motor Auction and Lifestyle Expo. That's a mouthful. It's from September 9th to September 11th here in New York, Piers 92 and 94. There's a $100 entry free.
What?
Entry free.
It's $100. I mean, obviously this is for like super high-end collectors of rare cars.
Yeah,
rare
classic cars and luxury items.
And the Batmobile is on sale.
Which Batman was it from?
Batman Returns.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll pass a fancy photo to Jimmy.
Oh, right.
The one with like the funky cockpit in the beginning.
Yeah, right. The like jet engine center looking intake, ramjet intake.
Yeah, I saw the one from, on the Warner Brothers lot, they had the one from Thor, Batman Forever
Returns,
or whatever,
right.
Something like that.
Oh,
the
Batman and Robin.
Yeah, Batman and Robin, yeah. It was like, it was pretty cool looking. It was all like
disco-y
and glowy and everything, but
yeah.
It was pretty fun. Like, I'd drive it, whatever.
If I had
it,
I'd
drive it.
Right, chick, dig the car.
Nice.
All right.
That's
you got some
news.
Extra cash in your pocket, you might as well go.
Here's some more fun news. For those of you, again, visiting the New York area or in New York, the Museum of the Moving Image has a Gumby exhibit coming out. Now, for those of you who don't know, and a little Gumby trivia, Gumby debuted on the Howdy Doody show.
I'm Gumby, damn it! Oh, not that Gumby. Okay.
In 1956, and then he had his own show, and the exhibit shows original sets. And Julio is singing in the background for us. The original sets are on display, and you get to explore stop motion.
Isn't it clay?
And I think you get to build your own Gumby.
Wow.
Exciting. So,
I
those of you.
I did that with a turd.
Oh. That was a tragic
thing. You had a lonely childhood.
Very
Let's poor.
I didn't have a good Gumby childhood.
Oh.
I mean, honestly, the first time I probably heard a Gumby, or maybe it was like when Eddie Murphy did him on Saturday Night Live, which
not
is probably better.
I'm sure it's a fun exhibit, though.
So, Gumby and the Art of Stop Motion Animation through January, Museum of the Moving Image in Queens, New York, Astoria. www.movingimage.us.
Can be followed by the Howdy Doody one.
Perhaps. So that's nice. That's the exciting Gumby, and we don't like any of this old stop motion claymation. I mean, I like
Davy and Goliath was cool.
We got hosed, Davy.
We got hosed.
Yes, we do.
Davy.
Now that was some good commercial.
Yeah.
For those of you that caught that Mountain Dew commercial.
Yeah,
that's funny stuff.
That was good.
Oh, you know what? I had one more piece of news that I wanted to throw in here. Flipping through Living in Infamy, we found that Ben Rabb is bringing back The Phantom. Another series of The Phantom coming out again, so look for that. Or is it out yet?
I don't think it's out.
No,
I think it's coming
Maybe
out.
It's coming soon.
Yeah.
So that's the fancy comic news. Movie news.
Movie news.
Yeah.
What we
when got? Is Marvel not in the movie news anytime recently? And God,
in the past,
they kind
every
of
episode
need
we
to
have
slow down a bit. But they're very close to striking a deal for an Iron Man movie. Mr. Avi Arad was speaking
Says.
About,
but not with Crazy Tom.
No, not anymore. But they got Nick Cassavetes as the writer. Which, yeah, like everyone ever involved with the movie, he says, yeah, he's got a personal attachment to it, and he's really excited to do it because of his own relationship with his father. That was a bag, mind you.
No. Sorry. The ripping noise is Jimmy ripping the bag.
That's right.
So he has a unique emotional attachment to Tony Stark, Nick Cassavetes.
I don't know.
How far down does that emotion go?
That's the question. Also, a sequel to The Punisher is supposedly planned with Jigsaw as the villain.
I'll buy that.
And another R-rated film, of course. The first Punisher.
Didn't see it.
I didn't bother seeing it.
I wanted to see it, but I probably will see it on, you know,
I just seen it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I didn't see it because I had too many negative.
Yeah, that's why I didn't go to see it. But people. I'm glad I actually saw it because it wasn't as bad as like the critics made it out to be, I guess. But
again, you said too, there's a lot of inside. Like you enjoyed it more because of the comic.
Yes, I enjoyed it more because I knew like they did the serious beginning and the serious end, like the Punisher should be, and then they kind of tacked in the middle the Garth Ennis.
Yeah, cause that's what they said they were gonna follow the Garth Ennis storyline a little more.
They only did that really in the middle. That whole fight against the Russian was just hilarious.
Yeah,
but it was funny to me. Other people sitting there would be like, "This is too comic bookish."
Yeah,
but I thought it was a great inside
joke. Because I love the series. I love the when Ennis when he did that series, and now he's totally.
And that was wrestler Kevin Nash. I didn't even realize, but it was so.
I'll check it out on DVD. One more comic book.
One more, Hulk 2. Yeah.
Wow.
Silence.
What?
Hulk 2.
What?
Yeah. So, now Arad described which one as Diet Hulk because.
The original.
Because it wasn't really clear here.
He said, quoted, I think, he described the first one as Diet Hulk.
Diet Hulk, okay.
Hulk classic.
They thought it was fine when they released it.
Wow.
But he wants to play up the childlike curiosity of the Hulk in the second one and make it more like the Frankenstein monster background.
So it'll be all CGI'd and...
Probably.
Most likely.
Yeah, I don't know. That should not be me. Sorry. Yeah. They tried, and honestly, I didn't think it went well.
And I heard today they want to do a CGI Turtles movie.
Yeah, I heard that too.
You know what? I heard that.
No.
You actually spoiled it. I have that for the next
episode.
Oh, God. Oh, well. That's actually something else I got. Well, during Comic-Con, Jimmy and I had a chance to sit down and talk with the creative team behind Living in Infamy. So we're about to go into that interview. Take a listen and enjoy.
Today on Comic News Insider, we're here with the creative team for Living in Infamy. And this is Joe and Jimmy. What's up? And they'll have the guys on the Living in Infamy team introduce themselves and tell us a little back history about the story and how it came to be.
Hi, I'm Derek Hughes.
And I'm Ben Rath.
And I'm Ashley Miller, and I'm the editor. I don't do anything actually important.
This is Ben again. Hi, how's it going? The way Living With Me started was right after the time I was finishing up my run on Green Lantern, and it was a night where I just couldn't sleep. A little bout of insomnia, and the title, Living in Infamy, popped into my head. I didn't know what the hell it was. I didn't know what the hell it meant or what the hell I was going to do with it. For the next 2 hours in the middle of the night, I basically just sat in bed thinking about this idea and just turned it over in my mind. And by the time I fell asleep, I had characters, I had a plot, and I had
an erection.
Well, because I was so excited about this book that we were going to do, even though we really weren't planning on doing it as a book. I was just thinking of something as maybe for like a Sci-Fi Channel TV show or some sort of TV pilot. And then the next morning, first thing, I called my writing partner Derek and told him the idea, and that's when it all went wrong.
Well, as soon as he told me the idea, Ben and I have what's called the list, and we have like all these different feature ideas and television show ideas. And so initially I thought, well, it's a great idea, let's just put it on the list. But something about it just stuck with me, and I just started thinking about it more and more. And I couldn't just put it away, and so I just started thinking about the nuts and bolts of what he had basically come up with. And I said, okay, well, what if we do this and this? And we just started snowballing from there. And again, we still thought, okay, well, we can do this as a TV show, or a feature idea. And so it wasn't until I sat down to dinner with my friend Ashley Miller, our editor now, and I told him the idea about it.
By the way, the idea in question was...
Yeah, what is
we,
that?
We haven't really covered yet. Is
the wheel.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. We reinvented it and then tried fire. You know.
Flaming wheels.
Flaming wheels, but...
Ghost Rider.
Oh.
Hey.
Someone else's concept. But the basic idea was, Infamy is a town in Arizona that is a witness protection town for reformed supervillains. And that was the fire that we invented.
So I heard this from Derek, and he was giving me kind of their list of things that they wanted to go out and pitch for TV. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, dude, you've lost your mind. That's a great comic book. And if you got any brains in your head, do it as a comic book first, and then sell it off as a TV show and as a feature. But make a great comic first, and Hollywood will beat a path to your door. Little did I know that about a year later, I would be kind of Hollywood beating a path to his door, because I got hooked up with a guy named Robert Meyer Burnett, who's a publisher of Living in Infamy, and who is the CEO of Ludovico Technique. And, you know, I knew that Rob was looking for property, so...
$3.
Oh, it is $3.
We're doing this interview actually at their booth, and so we got people coming by and picking up their book, which they should be, because it's a great one. So,
and we're very excited about it,
by the way.
We have to allow the process of sale.
Right. So,
we're going to get the dollars getting going.
Yeah, I was distracted by cash. Anyway, Rob, I told Rob the idea, and he thought it was great, and I knew that he wanted to publish comic books, so I called the guys and I said, look, Rob wants to pay to publish Living in Infamy, and let's go and let's do it your way, and let's make it as great as we can, and let's be, you know, committed to getting the project done the way you want it done, and we'll let the rest of it take care of itself. And, you know, I sat these guys down with Rob, and they hit it off, and, you know, we just went... go. I mean, within 3 weeks, we had like some postcards, we had some concept art, and we were in Comic-Con last year, you know, just pimping the concept. And, you know, watching the postcards that we developed fly off of the sample table.
They were free.
They were free. Yeah. Yeah.
But the response really was good. I mean, it was just, you know, everyone that heard the idea was like, I wish I'd thought of that.
That's right.
But they did.
They didn't think of it.
Well, I just want to touch upon, I know a lot of people probably know Ben here, background, he was in Green Lantern, I remember picking up, you know, Union Jack back in the day, did with Cassidy, and the X-Men Alpha Flight and everything, but your co-creator, Derek here, is fairly new to the game. I'm just curious how you guys got hooked up and started working together.
I'll let Derek tell the story, it's funny.
Fanboys, listen up closely. Stalking pays off.
Nice.
Actually, what happened was, it was John Cassaday. It's all his fault. I love Planetary. I love his artwork. He's one of my favorite artists. And at the time, I was a writer's assistant on a little show called Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, which also Ashley Miller is one of the writers and producers on that show. And every Wednesday, comic books, as you know, come out on Wednesday, and I go pick up my favorite comic book. And one Wednesday, I thought Planetary was going to come out. It didn't come out. I'm sitting in the comic book shop, and I'm cursing John Cassaday because he's a lazy artist, and these lazy artists, they never put out a book on time. Meanwhile, off in the corner, Ben is sitting here listening to Fanboy rant and rave.
If I may interject here, I go to comic shops regularly. I listen. I hear. Everybody knows everything. And John can attest to this, too. When I was still living in New York, we'd go to like Jim Hamley's Universe or Midtown Comics, and there's always someone who knows the score, someone who's got the inside dope on exactly what's going on behind the scenes. And, you know, when you work in the industry, you just sort of let it slide. It's like, all right, everyone, you know, they read it on the internet, they heard it from a friend, that kid in the schoolyard told them, whatever. Here's this guy going off on John. I couldn't let it go.
Is that when the fisticuffs began?
Well, you know, it was like, it was, you know, every time you go into a comic book shop, there's that one guy that's ranting and raving about what he knows. Well, today, it was my day. And Ben comes over and he says, "You're absolutely wrong. It's not John's fault." Well, my first reaction in my mind was like, "Well, who the fuck are you?"
I could have been another fanboy at that moment. That was my fanboy.
But politely, I said, "Okay, and how would you know this?" And he goes, "Well, I'm Ben Rabb, and John is my
who the fuck are you?
John is one of my best friends, and I stood up for him at my wedding, and it's not the artist's fault, it's the writer's fault in this case." And I'm still like, "Okay, well, who's Ben Rabb?" And then the comic book shop owner said,
"That guy. Nobody knows who the hell I am."
So he said, "Ben Rabb, he did Excalibur, and he worked at Marvel and DC, and it's like, "Oh, I thought you'd be older and fatter." That was my first reaction. And as luck would have it, Ben had just moved from New York out to Los Angeles and was looking to make the transition to television and film. So when he found out that I was actually working in television, he wanted to...
figured I could use him.
Yeah, sit down and talk about television. Little did he know that my mutant power is that I have the ability to become a lamprey and suck the life out of anybody near me. So over the next couple of years, we developed a great friendship and a strong writing relationship and became writing partners and still doing the Hollywood square dance.
So what's very exciting about this particular project is that you guys had an awesome opportunity to get some really great artists to do cover art for the series. Tell us a little bit about that and maybe how that came to pass and the artists that are doing the four titles.
That's all Ben. I give credit where credit's due, and Ben is the one that said, "Let's get these people."
Well, I mean, you know, taking advantage of the fact that I'm friends with John and he's a huge, you know, star in comics and the Mick Jagger of comics in his own way. Oh, that's harsh. That's just not cool. But yeah. So, you know, I was quite happy to take advantage of him and have him do our first cover, and he was certainly, you know, open to doing it. He knew how excited we were about the idea, and he liked it too, so he's like, "Yeah, why not?" And then, you know, Derek actually had worked while he was working on Andromeda. The Mutant X office was right next door, and he got to know Howard Chaykin a little bit, so he threw out the idea of Chaykin, and we got in touch with him, and Chaykin signed on. The pay was good, and
then we found some I think incriminating photos of Tim Sale. Is that the deal?
We said we weren't supposed to talk about that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
No photos.
Sorry, oh, yeah.
Which one of the ones you showed? Oh, no.
Yeah.
No photos.
Never.
No, but I got emailed Tim, and I got in touch with Chris Pachalo, who I'd worked with when I was still an assistant editor on the X-Men, and they were amenable to it. They had some time in the schedule, and, you know, it was just a cover, and they did amazing work. I mean, anyone who's at the con right now is getting to see it. Hopefully your listeners will see him on the show.
He can describe it for you in loving detail. Ben says, you know, it's just a cover, but honestly, it's a lot more than that. Because, I mean, the cover, I think, speaks volumes to the comic book readers who are standing at the rack deciding what they want to look at. You know, and number one, I think, you know, the images these guys came up with and they drew are all great, and they draw your eye in and of themselves. But the simple fact that, you know, I, as a comic book fan, am looking and I see John Cassidy's name on a cover, or I see Howard Chaykin, you know, I'm thinking, okay, you know, this is something, attention must be paid, you know. It's like, I need to, like, give this at least a look. Because if these guys thought that it was worth their time to draw a cover, if they could find some kind of inspiration from it, you know, then, you know, maybe I should spend the 30 seconds deciding whether or not to read it.
Yeah, I agree with that about the covers, but what's great about some of these artists is that, you know, you don't have to see their name, you can tell their style.
Absolutely.
And, like, I mean, I came in before I met you guys, you know, I can see this, and I know that's Cassidy's style, I know that's, you know, Chris's style and Shaken's style, things like that. It's amazing. So just to have, and like I said, you know, your writing is everything as well, but just to see in the art piece, it's like, it could tell that story just on the cover.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to have that. I know you guys have got some great choices.
Oh, thank you.
So just to run through them, number one is...
Cassidy. Number two is Chaykin. Number three is Chris Pachalo. And Tim Sale is number four.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Is there some contact information, a website?
Yeah, they can go through, if people want to send us, like, once they've read the book, if they want to email us, it's ludovicocomics@aol.com. The website is ludovicotechnique.com. The day two of con. And it's ludovico
Bethnique.com.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for joining us on Comic News Insider. Thank you, guys.
Well, we hope you gained some insightful knowledge after listening to the guys at Ludovico Technique Comics and their book, Living in Infamy.
Yeah. We have many more great interviews with your favorite artists and writers still to come.
Some good ones coming.
That's right. Make sure you keep checking out our upcoming podcasts. We want to thank Jimmy for taking the time to sit down with us.
Word.
That's too short, man.
Yeah, well, pretty short one.
Nah, it's not bad.
We'll kick back a brew.
What happened to the five picks or something like that? You not doing that?
Yes,
come
see?
On.
I know.
I'm a big listener. I listen. I actually have
five today.
We had five, and I was like, no, we're not going to have time.
Oh, I had a couple picks, but that's all right.
All right. Next pod, we'll give the five picks, and Jimmy will give
any quick plugs.
Any other plugs?
Watch Firefly.
Jimmy's plug: watch pick up the Firefly DVD
or Sci-Fi 6 o'clock.
My plug is to watch Battlestar Galactica.
I gotta watch it.
I really like it. I think it's an awesome series. Of course, I'm a sci-fi geek,
but I thought
they're doing a great job. They're getting a lot of viewers that are not necessarily sci-fi geeks.
Mm-hmm.
I think they get a great human interest type story.
Yeah.
So that's my one plug. Julio, one plug?
I was going to plug an upcoming store opening
in
Brooklyn.
Plug it.
Which is named Rocket Ship, and they're going to be at 208 Smith Street. They're opening in first week of August. So that's about it. They're having like a big gala thing, July 29th. But I guess that's for local
comics.
People.
And
it's art and comics. It'll be mostly comic books.
Any special people for the opening?
Not really. But they are having, I guess, local artists have stuff up in the store, and they'll be available to sell their own personal stuff.
Oh, well, that sounds very good.
All right. So, in closing, we'd love to hear from you listeners out there. If you'd like to send a comment about the show or if you have some inside information, email us at comicnewsinsider@yahoo.com.
And to get all your comic book podcasts in one place, be sure to check out the Comics Podcast Network at www.comicspodcasts.com. Thanks again for checking out Comic News Insider. Tune in again.
Later.
Later.
Bye.
Send a check.